go ahead. We should go. Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you very much for having me here today. I appreciate the opportunity to come and share my enthusiasm for this project. This is something that's meaningful to me. I'm very enthusiastic about this. And sometimes I get carried away with it. And I can probably talk for hours on this topic. So if I can go off course. So if I veer too far, and you can always, don't forget that you can always reel me back in. And if I don't explain something, because I think that you know as much as I know about this, so then for sure, call my attention. If for some reason the mic doesn't work or you don't hear me, for sure let me know about that. I have a habit. It's a peculiar habit. I come to shul on Sukkot, not with one set of Luv and Esrig or Dal Minim, not one set, not just one set for myself, not just one set for all my children, but I usually come with extra sets. I end up, don't tell my wife about this, but I usually end up with more sets than I need for myself and my family. I think I end up saving money. You know, you buy in bulk, you get a better deal. But I usually end up more than I need. And it's served me well many, many times. I come to shul on Sukkot, and there are people with their lulav, with their esrig, and I feel bad for them. That's your lulav, that's your esrig. I remember there's one guy, I remember a friend of mine, he had been in Lakewood, and he spent a lot of time, he's proud, he bought himself a beautiful lulav, and I think to myself, I'd be embarrassed for such a lulav. One reason why this happens is because people don't have to take care of the lulav. They don't have to take care of the esrig. If you buy grapes in the market today and you leave them on the counter, how long will those grapes last? Hours, days, depends how what position, what they were up to, but they're not going to last all that long. They'll be shriveled, they're going to get bugs, everything's going to go wrong. Assuming that the salespeople took proper care of the lulav and the esrig before they sent it to you, and it's pristine condition when you got it, let's assume that that's the case. It's probably not, because you don't have an open market over here, right? It's everything comes pretty much, you order it, then you get it. That's that correct?
Yes.
Right. So usually those people, the people that pack up the stuff, they don't really pack it to preserve it. It's usually not packed the way it would be packed for preservation. It would double or triple the shipping costs. They'd have to ship it refrigerated to do it right. And that I'm interested. They don't overnight it. It usually takes a few days in the mail. The mail, it can be the season, it can be warm. Those things are going through the worst treatment possible. And you get it and you take it home, and then what do you do with it? So everybody has their own things that they either they come up on their own, they saw, they heard, whatever it is that they what they do with it, they don't know they have to take care of it at all. They just leave it in the package, and it's a living, it was a living plant, it was a living item, and every moment it's deteriorating. So even if it was beautiful on the first day of Yom Tov, by the last day of Chol HaMoed, it's in terrible condition. It could be, by some stroke of luck, that the climate is right and the time is and the weather is good and everything lasts. That doesn't often happen. So our goal today is like this. There are many halachas about what the lulav and esrig have to look like and be the condition they have to be in order to be yotzei the mitzvah. So what we're going to discuss is those halachas that could go wrong. Meaning like this. This esrig, an esrig has to be an esrig. You can't use a lemon, you can't use a grapefruit, you can't use a pomelo, you can't use any other citrus fruit, right? It has to be an esrig. The halach is that to qualify something to be called the fruit, called esrig, that's not our topic today. But assuming that this esrig, the kosher esrig, when you took it from the store, how are you going to preserve the kashrus of the esrog, to keep it kosher once it comes, once you get, comes into your possession, once you get a hold of it. That's one of the things you don't do, right? Why not? Why not? Why wouldn't you do that with your esrog? Now, by the way, I sent this guy a text on Monday. The guy who sent it, he overnighted this to me. Yeah, it was kind of him to overnight it. I sent him a text. I want bad esrogim, but not garbage that you would never see in a store. I wanted bad. Unfortunately, he didn't listen. He sent me, it's not, I wanted something that would be really, really terrible. I could say, oh, look, here you got this problem, here you got this problem, and look at that thing over there, and it's not that way. It's like mediocre. I mean, I don't know if I'd buy such an essay like this for myself. I don't know if I'd buy it, but I'm thinking to myself, one of these essays, I'm saying, you know, it's kosher. I didn't want a kosher essay. I wanted something that can show you that this is no good. And this is something you would never want on your asterisk, right? But we didn't get that. So if you want to know that information, you're going to have to read the book. But we do have some things on these asterisks. But I like to start always with the lulav. These are lulav that were sent to me from Florida a few weeks ago. And they were not packaged well. And I forgot about them totally. And I had left them in a shul someplace. Until Rabbi Greenspan called me one day and said, hey, are you going to bring lulav and esrog when you come? And I said, never thought of that. But then I remembered somewhere I had left an esrog in the shul, and I went back and it was still there. It doesn't look like the kind of lulav you want to use on Sukkot. I'll pass it around. As a matter of fact, you can have it pass it around. It doesn't look like if you want to touch it, that is. We'll talk about these things. The truth is, I haven't even looked at this lulav in several weeks, so I don't even know what the status of it is today. What's going on over here? Okay, you can pass this one around this way. I didn't look at these things. But you will notice one thing. I didn't take care of these lulavim. When they sent them to me from Florida, they weren't $100 love. What does it cost out here? A set, a Lulav and Esrog set. $65. Okay, you guys get away easy. I understand. In Brooklyn, you can get everything you want, but there's a market for the lulavim, not sets, for the lulavim, that starts at $150 a piece. They don't look like this. They started at $150 a piece. That's the starting price. And if you come and bring a tie, the price just went up. Or if your shoes are polished, you know what I mean. If you look like you're the kind of guy who's spent some money. Okay, so what's wrong? What went wrong with these lulavim? And why wouldn't I want your lulav on Sukkot to look like that? Can I get one of them back? Well, we'll talk about these things. Can I get one back? I didn't look at them yet myself today. I'm just.
And they're bent. No, that's not something
wrong with it. We'll talk about what we see over here. All right. What went wrong with these lulavim was they weren't stored away. How do the commercial guys keep it? They ship it refrigerated. They ship it in wax. They ship it refrigerated. Take a quick peek. Just look at the bottom. You have it over there. Take a look at the bottom. What do you see on the bottom? Nothing. It's been cut. It's rough. You see that? It's been cut and rough. The commercial, you can take the other one, look around. Yeah, the commercial guys seal it with wax. They seal the bottom of the lulav with wax because they don't want this to happen. They don't want it to dry out. They put some, I don't know how they do it, because you put hot wax, you cook the lulav, you're just as bad off. But I don't know what they do, but they put wax on the bottom. They send it shipped in, not wrapped in plastic, which increases, which causes mold. They have it in waxed boxes. They ship it refrigerated. They have many tricks that they use to keep it fresh, because as soon as you leave it out of the refrigerator for a short while, it's gonna end up looking like this. Now this lulav, they asked me if it's dry. Is it dry? So halachic definition of dry means, what does halachic dry mean? If it crumbles when you, does it crumble? Then it's not dry. Is it kosher? It's kosher. Would you want to use this in a mitzvah? Definitely not. Is it hiddur? Definitely not. but it is but it's not dry. But a lulav could get dry. How's a lulav going to dry out? In 10 minutes. A beautiful lulav can dry in 10 minutes.
Even in the
sun? The sun, you have to do worse than that. You got to put it on the dashboard of your car. You put the lulav, you're driving home from shul, chol moed, and you put the lulav in the dashboard of the car. You have a 10-minute drive home. What's happening? You have the old magnifying glass trick. Remember when you were little kids, you used to use the magnifying glass in the leaves, right? And after a few seconds, you go to burn the leaf. You have the same thing going on. You have the sun shining through your front window. You have, you're drying out your lulav. It takes a few minutes for the adasim to dry, a few more minutes for the lulav to dry out. 10 minutes, you probably blew it. So that's one thing we want to avoid. A dry lulav that's really, really possible, it takes longer than that. But a dry lulav that you wouldn't want to use it for the mitzvah, it's not hither, 10 minutes. And you got it. 10 minutes on the dashboard, you got it. But you don't have to put it on the dashboard for 10 minutes. Bring it home from the store and leave it on your dining room table, out of the sun, but leave it there for a whole week. It's also gonna look like this. So you want to preserve the lulav, you want to put the lulav in a place that's going to keep it fresh. Anybody have a refrigerator that you could fit your lulav into? Right, but then where you put the yomtov food, right? So you got a refrigerator you can keep this in. Now, okay, so I say maybe I can like squeeze it in some spot, the old refrigerator is, and I can leave it in. Where are you going to put it? So if you put it leaning, somebody else mentioned before, what happens, a lulav is supposed to be straight. I'm running ahead of myself. We have to know certain basics about a lulav. There's three parts to the lulav, three areas on the lulav. See, that's why it's good, it's garbage. I don't have to feel bad about this. You have over here the centerpiece, where my fingers are blocking. Right here, my fingers are touching it, the centerpiece of the lulav. This is you call it in English the spine, the shedra. It's the branch. This is the branch. Don't ever say that to a horticulturist or a botanist, whatever they are. They'll be very annoyed at you. This whole thing, and according to them, the whole thing is only a leaf. But we call this the branch, right? It's a branch. So you have over here the branch, the shedra, the main piece. You have the leaves. 99% of the time, there are a few halachas about leaves, but they're so rare to come across those situations, we can skip that for today. You have over here is the center leaf, the main leaf of the lulav. The center leaf. That's this one here. Okay? The center leaf. This is called the tiyamus. Right? This is the center leaf. It's the tiyamus. Here, it's the center. Or everything else is double, 2, 2, 2. And this is the only one that's single. Right? Everything else has a pair to it. You can see even as I spread them. Everything else has a pair. And this is single. This is the tiyamus. Most of the halachas and most of the problems about a lulav develop on the tiyamus. As a matter of fact, when I go to the store to look for my own lulav in Brooklyn, you ever been to Brooklyn every Yom Tov, it's an open market, the streets are lined with tables. I don't even have to pick up the lulav to know whether I want it or not. I see it laying on the table, and I look at the tip. If I see there's a problem, I know that leaf is the tiyamus, and I know I don't want that lulav. I don't have to pick it up and do this all to see which is the TMS. If I see there's a problem, I know that at least is the TMS. It's okay. So what's the rules of this TMS? The TMS can't be dry, it can't be split, it can't be split. Those are the two main things that we're worried about. This is not yet dry, even though it's been drying, not yet dry. Where does the lulav split? How does your lulav split when you drop it? It splits when you drop it, so you keep it over the kids. When you have a low ceiling and you bang it, and you go back around, you walk around by Yeshanis, and the guy before you is going a little slow, you give him a nudge, and he gets caught in his talus, right? Those are the ways that you split the leaf. So you just have to keep careful of that stuff. But the shedra, the only one real halacha that's practical about a shedra, about the main thing, and that is it can't be bent. Okay? Now, a true bend that should be halachically possible you'll never find, because that means it has to be bent like this. And nobody's going to try selling you a lulav bent like this. Nobody will try that one. But you see what I just did? I did bend it. This is not kosher. I mean, it's not possible, but it's certainly not mahudr. I wouldn't want to have a lulav like this. So if I put my lulav to storage, leaning on the wall, and I leave it that way for 10, 12 hours, what's going to happen to it? It's going to bend. If I put it in a bucket of water and I lean it on the side of the bucket, the same thing's going to happen. So the way you want to store a lulav is laying flat. Where? Well, not on the dining room table where the grandchildren are not going to get to it. And not on the top of a bookcase, which is out of reach from everybody, because why? Anybody here into HVAC, it's called? Heating, air conditioning? Right? HVAC. Yeah, so that's the, it can be 15 degrees warmer over there. So if your room is 70 degrees, your top of your bookcase is 85 to 90 degrees. You're cooking, not really cooking, but you're drying it out at a much higher, much faster rate. So putting it on the floor, and the kids step on it, and putting it up there, you're no good. Refrigerator, most people can't fit it into the refrigerator, so what do? The answer is there's not much to do. You're stuck. But what you can do is you can keep it in the bag, in a plastic bag. In a plastic bag, but ventilated. If it's no ventilation, you're going to get mold. So you want it like that blend. So these bags, actually, are one of the best ways to store it, because they're open on top, and sometimes on the bottom too, if you're not careful. And they don't really stick to the lulav. They give you those things. They sell you those plastics in the store, the hard, stiff plastic. So those, a lot of times, there's no ventilation. You leave it in there. You're keeping it dry. You're keeping it. It's not evaporating the moisture, but it's dripping and it can get moldy and everything. Okay, so those are the basic things you want to be mindful of. You want to make sure you're not splitting the tiyamis by putting it in a place where it's accessible. You're not drying it out on the dashboard of a car. You're not leaving it too high up on the floor. I like to keep it in the basement. I have a guest room in the basement, which is usually vacant on Yom Tov, and I leave it on the beds in the guest room. So it's the basement, it's off the floor, the door is locked, the kids can't get in there. And it's a basement, so it's cool, dry, no moisture down there. So that's what I feel is the best place, and if you have that option, that's the best place. If you have a commercial refrigerator that you can fit this into the refrigerator laying down, not leaning, then go for that. That's how the professionals, or the guys that charge you $100,000 lulav, that's how they store them. Okay, any questions about the lulav in particular? Okay, wet increases mold. If it wasn't stored properly, and there's even a trace of mold someplace on the lulav, and it can get held up in customs for 3 days in the heat, and you can get mold growing on it. You won't even know about it. It's stuck between two leaves. It could, and there could be scales. You know what scales are?
Insect.
Scales, what?
It's an insect.
That's right. Scale is an insect. They're tiny little insects. They live in a wax cocoon. And that's my experience, that if there's even one scale, and the Egyptian will love him. I don't know what to do this year with the Egyptian, whether we're going to love him from Egypt or not this year. But the Egyptian will love him, notorious for having scales. They could, one or two scales, you'll never notice them. But if you keep your lulav wet, the scales will multiply, and the whole lulav will be covered in scales in no time. Can you treat a lulav from scales? Yes.
No, in other words, can you take your lulav and pre-treat it, let's say, with some
fumigate it? By USDA regulation, they're not allowed to bring them into the country unless they're fumigated.
I'm saying once you have it in your possession, it's yours.
You could try if you know how to do it.
Can you somehow treat the...
Not to prevent... Yes, people have told me... people who work in the industry, they know that they have hundreds of love them. If they find mold, they use Lysol. They dip the lulav into a Lysol water something or other, whatever. They make a mixture of Lysol and water. You can fumigate them if you know how to do that. Freezing it? Yes, lulavim are frozen. The commercial lulavim, they start harvesting the commercial lulavim Shavuos time. They start harvesting Shavuos time. You can store it in your freezer. Yes, they do it. The most lulavim, the Israeli lulavim, the ones that come from Israel, are harvested Shavuos time, and they're frozen and shipped frozen. I never tried freezing it myself, but if you have a freezer big enough, go right ahead. No water. Stay away from water. Stay away from water.
So can you seal it? You have like a spray seal.
Oh, I mean that's what you mean to treat it.
And when I say treat it, I don't mean there's something wrong. I'm saying.
I that's what I thought you meant.
You spray it.
Like putting a sealant on it. I never thought about that. They do put wax on the tips. They do. People talk about. It's discussed for the last 200 years about gluing the tip of the tiyamis. Coating the tip of the tiyamis with glue or wax or something that will prevent it from ever opening. Which has many halachic ramifications. I touch on it in the book. But that's an interesting thing. Can you do the whole lulav? Okay, can you put like some kind of sealant that will prevent it from, probably yes, but I'm not qualified to answer that question. I never thought about it in the past. I never talked about it. My guess would be yes, but I wouldn't do it until I spoke with a competent authority. Okay, any other questions on the lulav?
So a wine cellar would be good?
Wine cellar is perfect. That's the best place you can think of. Anybody else?
Would you say that it would be a good idea to maybe put extra holes in the bag?
No. You sort of want the plastic sitting on it and keeping the air from the moisture of the lulav from evaporating. You don't want to hug it so tight that it should be no ventilation at all and grow mold. You need that balance. I've seen, every year they depends on which supplier is supplying the market, cloth bags for holding the lulavim. In my opinion, those are very good. You have the right blends of keeping enough moisture in and not getting it wet that it should. Okay. These are aravos that I cut in my backyard this morning. About 6 o'clock this morning, I cut these aravos. I want you to look at them. They're sitting in my car for the last few hours. Look at them. Look at the tips of the aravos. Look at mainly at the tip. The tops. These are cut 6 o'clock this morning. I was sitting in my car since 6 o'clock this morning. 6 o'clock this morning. What time is it now? It's 1 o'clock? 6 o'clock this morning they were cut, right? That's not even 6 hours ago. Oh, I'm sorry. It's more than 6 hours ago. Right? Okay, now these are not commercially grown aravos. And the commercial guys have certain tricks how they treat the aravos. With water and no water, how they time the watering, that the stem, the top of the stem is very, very soft and like new growth. It's like flimsy, that's why it goes so fast. And the bottom is firmer. The commercial guys have tricks, how they glue that the whole stem should be evenly stiff, but which my kids don't do. But you do see what can go wrong with a arava. As a matter of fact, there's a medrash that even talks about this. There's a medrash. I'm not going to quote the whole Medrash, but the Medrash, people know the beginning of the Medrash, where the Medrash says that the Dalaminim, the lulav of the Esrog, represent the person's body, the Esrog is the heart, and the Aravos are the lips, and the Adasim are the eyes, and the lulav is the spine. That's the beginning of the Medrash. The Medrash continues and goes on, and says that the Dalaminim represent the Aves. The Esrog is Avraham Avinu, and the lulav is Yitzchak, the Adasim is Yaakov, and the Aravos are Yosef. Why Yosef? Just like the Arava dies earliest of all the other Minim, wilts the fastest, Yosef died before all his brothers. So it's not a new problem. The Medrash already picked up on this one, that the Aravas wilt very quickly. Aravas, can I have one? I just need one. I wish it would have been better to show this. There's a little leaf on the tip of the aravos that people like to get at. It's called the lavlov. It's a little tip over there. Yeah. I'm I'm sorry, my hands shake a bit. You can see it. You can pass it around and see. There's very, most of them have it. I think one didn't have it. Here. There's a little leaf on the tip. Here. This one here. See it?
Yeah.
That's the lavlov. It's called lavlov. It's a fancy word. It's an Ivrit word. It means bud. It means the bud. That's the growing tip. That's the growing tip. That tells me, if I have that leaf, that tells me that this arava was never cut. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens that if the arava was cut at the top, it's possible. That leaf tells me that this arava was never cut. But that leaf also wilts very quickly. So,
commercial ones don't have it?
Mostly, what's the name? The main guy who sells in Brooklyn, I don't know what you get over here, but the main guy in Brooklyn, what?
Mansi
Aravis. It's now one person. The Shatz Aravis, Mansi Aravis are now owned by the same person, two brothers. So one of them I spoke with, he told me that he tries very hard to not have those on his Aravis. He tries not to have them. They have tricks in how to do it. If they cut it off, they just passed. They made a puzzle. They have tricks in our agriculture how to get it to fall off on its own, because when people start looking for it, they ruin all the other stuff, merchandise. When they start rummaging through it, looking for those, they ruin everything else. So that's it. He doesn't have any of them. But they also can ruin your own arava. As soon as it wilts, the top of it, it's thin. In order to have that lavlov, you have to be a thin tip and it get like this. Not only isn't this hadar beautiful, if it gets really bad like this, and sometimes that happens, it's pasul. What do you mean it's pasul? It's not. The halach is, you have to hold the lulav and esrig the right way up, right? How about if I tell my lulav like this, the bottom right, and the top of it was bent? How about, right? That's no good. That's no good. That's possible. If my rava is the same thing, the Shari Shuva says, my rava is the same thing. My rava is bent over on the top. I didn't hold it the right way. I mean, I could still use that rava. If I held my ravas like this, I could still use them. But who walks around in shul holding their ravas like that, right? So, right? You can put rings around it, but not api kabbalah. So, api kabbalah is the top. Yeah, because, whatever. This is not my topic today. Thank you. That's aravis. The main thing with the arav is, how do you preserve this? If you leave it like I left it in my car for the last 6 hours, you see what's going to happen to it. If you leave it wrapped in a wet paper towel, it's going to turn black. If you leave it in water, that the bottom half is in water, the bottom half, the leaves will turn black and it will start to smell. And the top half, the leaves will come so brittle that if you touch them, they're going to crumble. So what do you do with the arava? You buy new ones. That's the best answer.
Can you put it preservative? Like, if you ever get flowers? Like,
yes.
A little packet?
Yes.
What that packet does is it
counterbalances all the terrible things that were put into your sink water that will ruin the plants. It counters those neutralizes. It neutralizes all the terrible things that were added to your drinking water that they shouldn't ruin the plants. That's what that packet does. You can use Clorox for the same price. So that's it doesn't that stuff. As far as I know, that stuff doesn't preserve it. We've tried that. We've experimented with that. If you have a rubbish growing in your backyard, the best thing to do is preserve it. It's to exchange them. The other solution is when you buy your lulav, ask them for an extra one of these, two extra. One for your aravis and one for your hadassim. If you're one of those brave people like myself, that you don't use that little woven lulav holder, but you just tie these directly onto the lulav, so you're very lucky. You can take apart the aravis and you can put them into one bag without any water. And you take apart the hadassim and put them into a different bag with just a drop of mist. If you're one of those guys who use the lulav holder, so you only need one bag. And you put it into this bag. The benefit of this bag is Well, obviously, you cut off the top. It shouldn't be needed so long for it. You'll never get them back out. The benefit of these bags are that they're snug. They fit onto the adasim that rovis. Like you said before, they don't not so tight that it should be wet and turning black. They're not so loose that everything is evaporating. So yeah, this is the best deal. If you can't use one of these, you can get a shopping bag. Any grocery store shopping bag will do almost the same trick, except that you might bend the tips when you put it in, and then you're going to like sort of like iron in that bend. Like you're going to, if it's there for too much, too long. But you have to be much more careful if you use a grocery store shopping bag. Use the big ones that you get from the big department stores. But the rubbers are the trickiest because you don't want to keep them wet. You put them into a bucket of water, the bottom will be black and smelly, the top will be dry and brittle. You don't want to refrigerate them, even refrigerate them open, because the same thing. The moisture leaves it. It will go out of it. Just like you leave fruit in the refrigerator for too long also, the moisture starts to leave. So I found, this is my experience has been this. There's a guy, I see it around Brooklyn, I don't know if you sell it, the hodgepodge of those things that they sell you for all those tricks they try to store your lulav esrim and all that stuff. There's a company called Arava Keeper, which makes a commercial bag, a little bit thicker than this plastic, with a zipper. It's easier to use. I found those work beautiful. I bought a bunch of those. They were $3-4 a piece. I bought a bunch of them. I should have thought of bringing them, one of them here today. But it's a little bit thicker plastic. You know what it's like? It's like those plastic you put your towels bag into, but designed and made right to hold that office. I found that those were very good. They sat just right, and the air and everything was perfect. They come with a stick in it because you don't want to have that problem of the bending. That stick is very important. Okay, so we covered the lulav, we covered the arovis. Hadassim, Baruch Hashem, Hadassim are they're self-sustaining. They don't really need too much attention. Unless you're very hard on them and you squeeze them a lot and you knock off the leaves, you're not going to run into trouble with Hadassim. You're not going to. If it was good when you got it, unless you leave it in the sun or do something else drastic like that, Hadassim will survive. I found that Hadassim, people save the lulav to burn with the chametz. I've seen plenty of times that the Hadassim that were left outdoors the whole winter are still, the leaves are still on them, and they could still be, the fact that the leaves are still attached, they'd still be kosher from left outdoors till Pesach.
Put it back in the bag that it comes in?
That's right. Very often today you buy the Hadassim, they come pre-packaged, three in a bag. Those bags are the best. Yes, you can use those bags for Hadassim too. Just refrigerate it in those bags. It's the same as using one of these. Right. They put in a very little bit of amount of moisture, and they missed it. It keeps it fresher, looking nicer. It's fine. But Hadassim, nowadays, we're not really given too much choice. What you buy, they prepackage it. Even in Brooklyn, it's very, very, very hard to find the loose Hadassim. So you pretty much, you're at the mercy of the packager. And whatever they give you, you're stuck with. But, and Baruch Hashem, they're very easy to take care of. You don't have to patch with them too much. Okay, how much time do I have left? I have to talk about the Esrig.
Okay, the Esrig, you have time.
Okay, the Esrig you have time for, right? All right. Okay, here's a nice one. There's two issues I want you to look at this esrig. One is inside the tip and right beneath it. Go ahead. Take a quick look at this esrig. Okay, now one thing you should know is that you're at a disadvantage in this room. The very poor lighting. Commercial, indoor, all the different stuff, fluorescents, incandescents, whatever you're going to find, doesn't compete with outside light. Light, not sun. I was about to get to that. Outdoors, in the shade, is the only place you're really going to see what an esrog looks like. Outdoors, in the shade, not in the sun. The sun will blur your vision, and you'll be too bright. You're not going to see clearly. If it's one of the problems of buying a lulav and ester is that they always sell it to you indoors and usually at night, right? Well, they sort of have you, right? So at least in Brooklyn, we have the deal that you have the opportunity to look at it tomorrow during the daytime, and you can always return it if you don't like it. I was hoping to see like some black spots on the esrig, some brown spots on the esrig. I told you that I asked the guy to send me the garbage, not stuff that really belongs in the garbage. Some of the worst quality. It looks like he was grabbed since random, because there's no. Like, I'm looking for a geschmack problem to show, and there's nothing really that's geschmack to show on these. Yeah, you can try that. I once had that experience years ago, maybe 20 years ago, when I was first trying to learn the Dalmidim. I went to the store, and I asked the guy, you came to Chalmoy, I figured everything's free. He came to Chalmoy, and I asked the guy, give me a surrogate, give me the worst. So he says, a surrogate? Yeah, I got for $35. And then I want the garbage. Give me a whole case, 100 of them, a whole case of garbage. So he wouldn't let me out for free. He still charged me $15 for the whole case of garbage. I went home and I couldn't find any problems. Yeah. I couldn't find any problems in those destroying. What did I pay 50?
So these are no issues?
No, I'm not focusing on those yet. We're focusing on two things. Everybody saw this one already?
No.
On the top, 2 points on the top.
Here?
Yeah. There's 2 points on that. How that's like. I'm just waiting for him until he's ready. Okay, most people have seen it by now, okay? So you notice two things. Number one, as in the place where there should have been a pitim, there was a hole. What do we do with that? That is a chaser. If I cut open the esrog, you'll see that the green outer layer goes all the way down inside. If you cut it open, I challenge you. It's not a chaser. A hole in an esrog could be a chaser. It could be, or even a hole, even if it doesn't missing anything, it could be possible. A hole itself, if I took a pin and I stick it through the esrog, that itself would make, even though nothing's missing, that would make the esrog possible. These holes that you have on top need an expert to look at them and tell you what the real story is. This is a Yemenite esrog. I can tell from the shape and from the hole. It's a Yemenite esrog. Yemenite esrog are notorious. They don't, not only don't they grow the pitim, not only don't they have a pitim, but where the pitim should have been, 50% of the time, you're going to find a hole. You're going to find a hole 50% of the time.
It grows like that?
It grows that way. It's not chaser, but it could still be possible under certain circumstances. But you need a professional to look at this and tell you what's going on. Now, I showed you that right next to it, there's a few scuff marks all around it. What are those? Those were, esrogim trees have thorns on them. All citrus fruit grow with thorns on them. What they do with the thorns on the oranges and the lemons, that they trim off the thorns a little bit. They pick the fruit before they're ripe. And they paint them. Three tricks that they use on the citrus fruits you buy in the grocery store. They pick it, the main thing is that they pick it before it's ripe and they paint them. An esrog will also pick before they're ripe because you see that it's green. A ripe esrog is what color? No. You knew if it was yellow, I would have asked you. What color is a ripe esrog?
Like waxy.
Orange. Orange. It's almost the color of that orange juice. A little darker. A ripe esrog. You've never seen a ripe esrog?
Does it taste sweet?
It doesn't taste sweet. It tastes like an apple, but less flavorful. But it doesn't taste bitter.
Maybe
you can get a beer. Yeah, esrog beer. I'm talking about eating esrog. Take a slice and eat an esrog. Now, why don't you see it as a ripe esrog? Because a ripe esrog takes a year or so to ripen. If you wanted to eat esrog as a fruit, you have to wait a year for it to be the size of a cantaloupe or a wood
on the tree.
And it'd be covered in all kinds of spots and specks and who knows what, you would never dream of using for the mitzvah. But I want to focus now is on these holes. These thorns are what you're worried about. You mentioned chaser. An esrog thorn on the tree, it waves in the wind. It hits a thorn. What does a thorn do? The thorn can make a hole. Make a hole. A hole is not always a problem. If around the hole it starts to rot, then you're in trouble. But that you're not going to see, because the store is not going to sell you that once it starts to rot. But it can be a very fine piece that's missing. And you have to look at these type of pieces carefully to see if it's missing anything. Okay. But that's not what we came to talk about, how to buy an esrog. I'm worried about when you're walking around in shul, you have a nice size esrog, and it falls on, and you can't hold it, and you bang it, you drop it on the floor, and it doesn't lose its pittim because it didn't start off with a pittim. But are you in trouble now? Are you in trouble now? Could be. You have to pay attention. You know what else you have to pay attention? If you have a delicate esrog, and that's seasonal, and you may have them this year. I don't know what's available for this year, but it depends on the years. There are some esrogim that are soft. This is firm. Phil, it's firm. You don't have to be not really. You'll tell everybody, and they'll trust me. Yeah, it's firm. Sometimes esrogim are soft. You have a soft esrog, and you hold it tightly against the lulav, and the lulav has that holder, and you're rubbing it on the holder. You're shaving your esrog. Think about that. It could be. It could happen. It could happen. I can't.
You don't want to be too soft.
You don't want a soft esrog, but you may not be given a choice about that. If those years that the esrogim are picked soft, they're called vaser esrogim, water. They're water. They blow them up to the right size by eating a lot of water. So what do you do about it? You have to be careful not to. So an esrog, in a certain way, is the hardest one to take care of because it's a very delicate fruit. Squeezing it, getting sweat on it, is going to discolor it. Squeezing your esrog, if you squeeze it, you shake it, you squeeze it a little bit because you don't have such good control. You're going to damage it. We're worried about the chaser. We're worried about this. On these esrogim are these white spots. They're all over all the esrogim. You saw it. They have white spots. The white spot, what this white is, I think, I have to do more research. I tried to do a lot of research already. When the skin gets damaged, the same way you grow a scab on your body, fruits grow scabs. And if you go to a farmer's market, you'll see that the tomatoes also have scabs on them. Not the ones you buy in the big grocery stores. But the ones you buy at the farmer's market, the tomatoes also have scabs. And that's a natural thing. If fruit gets damaged, it grows a scab. These are scabs. What's underneath that scab? What? Okay, so not always is it a hole. If there be a hole, it's possible. But what's underneath that scab? Esrogim are covered in scabs. All the esrogim are covered in scabs. So we try to avoid the scabs. But then the fewer the scabs you're going to get, the more pricey the esrog will be. That's your decision. But what's underneath the scab? That's one thing. The second thing is that sometimes the scabs are caused by diseases. And if it's a disease, certain diseases that can be on the esrog make the esrog possible. Okay. Generally, just if you just give me 2 or 3 more minutes, there's 3 main sections of the esrog. The top part. Sorry, do it over here. The top part, which is that's your left of my finger, your left of the finger. There's a ring around the esrog where it's sort of. It's hard to describe this. An esrog is almost round, right? But over here, the incline gets much sharper, right? So this part is called the chaitim. This piece here, this ring at the top is the chaitim. This is the main part of the esrog. It's the first thing you notice when you see an esrog. This ring here. That's why the halachas are much more stringent over here. The bottom section is where you can find you will find in commercial stuff much more problems because it's much less significant halachically. And the middle part is the middle. This is the most stringent part, least middle. Okay, that's three parts of the esrig. Pay attention to keep your esrig in good shape. How do you preserve an esrig? How do you preserve an esrig like this? You want to keep it like a fruit. The refrigerator is a good place, but the refrigerator will turn it yellow. I don't know why that happens, but it turns it very off color. I don't know why. But that's what happens. Put it in a wrap it. Usually, esrog can come, nowadays, they come in these type of plastics. They're great. They'll keep it from getting banged up. Wrap it in this. If you have a soft esrog, then put it into a plastic bag also. You have soft esrog, put it into a plastic bag also, that will keep it from shriveling. If it's thick and stiff and hard like this, you don't have to worry about that. One thing people love to talk about is making a green esrog yellow. Yeah? How do you make a green esrog yellow? You don't. That's the answer. You can try the apple trick. An esrog this green is kosher. It's kosher. And putting the apples can make the ukut fall out. And if you have a pitum, you can make your pitum fall off. Why take the chance? Any questions, any further discussion? Anybody wants to leave is welcome to leave. I think I overstayed my welcome.
They used to pack a bag of drogim in flax.
Right.
Is that better or worse than these plastics that we currently use?
From preserving it, they had a certain benefit. Getting your hand into these things is harder to get a grip, and you're potentially can dig your nails into the esrog and damage it. That's how I find these things. I had that in one we debate that most people couldn't do the flax properly, and it was falling apart, and the esrog would fall. So in that way, these are much better. It's much easier to put them away. Take them as a drop harder, not so much harder. The reason with the flax is it got your yom tov clothing filthy and left a mess in the shul, and nobody else wanted it. So I think it's also more expensive. What? Get caught on the pit. Yeah, it was a mess. I'm happy to use these things. The benefit of the flax was if you had those silver esrog boxes or even some of the wood ones, if your esrog was a little bit too small. And didn't fit in perfectly, so you put in just the right amount of flax to hold it right. These things don't necessarily give you the right; they're not necessarily the right places. And you know,
is there any problem using an esrog from one year to the next?
Theoretically, no. Practically, it's impossible. He tried it and it worked.
Okay.
I want to talk to him.
He took a canning jar. You know, the canning
yes,
jars
I've tried. I've tried in canning jars.
You put a candle in.
Yes. The problem is
right,
as it turns.
Uses up the oxygen, and then you have a vacuum.
Right, we've tried that. The problem is that they get moldy, even with that. After you take it out, not during.
Right.
If you take it out, they're also usually they're very soft and mushy. We've tried. I mean, I'm not a professional canner. I'm sure that you've used heat rather than candle. I'm sure that you can. I'm sure that it's done. I just don't know how. But generally, it's doesn't work. I've not a lot of experiments with it, but I've not successful with it.